Welcome back to The Pulse, stories at the heart of health, science, and innovation. I'm Maiken Scott. When dogs go to work, their office doesn't have cubicles.
We have a bright blue matted floor so the dogs can work on that floor without causing injury or slipping too much.
That's Dr. Cindy Otto. She's a veterinarian who directs the Penn Vet Working Dog Center in West Philadelphia. Dogs there train all day for future jobs in search and rescue, to sniff out bombs, and several of the dogs are going to be working in the medical field.
Currently, we're really focusing on two different things. One is cancer detection, specifically ovarian cancer, and then the second is diabetic alert dogs. And these are very different jobs. The diabetic alert dog will be paired with a diabetic individual, and they will specifically alert that person when their blood sugar is too high or too low. So that dog becomes the partner to the individual. Whereas our cancer detection dogs are very much removed from people. They work in an isolated environment, in that they work in a laboratory and samples are brought into them, and they are then screening those samples to tell whether or not there's evidence of the odor associated with ovarian cancer.
In the lab, five clear containers are lined up against the wall. A young Springer Spaniel named McBain comes in. His mission? Find the one sample that has cancer cells in it.
Good job, bud. Come here, Beanie. Oh, you got
it. So what did he just do?
So just now he went through, the first time he was just still a little too distracted, so we pulled him back and had him start over, and then he sniffed the samples, and when he put his nose on the one that had the cancer samples, he sat. And that's exactly what we want him to do.
Good job. Here.
Back in her office, Dr. Otto explains that the dogs are helping them detect if ovarian cancer has a smell, which could eventually lead to the development of an artificial nose, or e-nose, that would sniff out cancer in samples at a much larger scale and at a lower cost. So it could mean an inexpensive way to screen for ovarian cancer.
Because we know the dogs have a better sense of smell and ability to differentiate the confounding odors. So we think the dogs are going to help make a test that is going to be more widely available.
Can the dog detect something that a scientist couldn't see under a microscope, or can the dog do something that a person cannot?
Based on all the evidence, yes. We think that the dog's sensitivity, not only in his nose and ability to pick up very low levels, but again, to filter out all of the miscellaneous smells, that when the scientists look at it, they look at it and they look at the chemical signature using gas chromatography and mass spectrometry, and they try to separate out these chemicals into their individual components. And when you're talking of hundreds of thousands of chemicals in a sample, it's really hard to parse that out. And so the dogs almost act like a sieve to help us figure out, is it this group of chemicals versus that group of chemicals? And that's what we're going to be working with the chemist to try and help them narrow down the focus, because the dogs can do that naturally because they're using their brain as well as their nose.
And what is the sample made of that you're using in the cancer detection?
So for our initial training, we're using actual ovarian cancer samples, so tissue that's been taken from patients that had ovarian cancer. And so we're teaching the dogs to recognize the smell of ovarian cancer. The next step, though, is to move to plasma samples, so blood samples that have been collected from these patients, and comparing those to patients that have ovarian disease, but it's not cancerous, and then comparing those to control patients. And so trying to get those dogs to recognize what it is that's very unique and only in the samples with ovarian cancer.
And can we smell this as humans?
No, I don't think that we can. There are certainly some diseases that we can smell. I think a lot of people have been able to recognize the ketones associated with diabetes, and that's a pretty obvious smell. But what we're talking about is something that is so minuscule in the blood, or being, you know, exhaled in the breath or from the skin, that there is just no way that we can smell the things that we're looking for.
If I'm a person getting screened for cancer, what might that look like in 5-10 years if this research is successful?
Right now, our focus again is on ovarian cancer. We believe that different cancers are going to have different odors. Certainly, 10 years down the line, maybe we'll find something that's common in all cancers. That would be wonderful, but probably not as logical, given that cancers are so different from different tissues. For ovarian cancer, our ultimate goal would be that a person could even collect a urine sample and ship it off every 6 months to be screened. So very simple, very, you know, painless process, and you just know that, you know, your sample comes up negative, and if there's any positive, then you go to your doctor and you get a full examination and you get the more aggressive screening, like ultrasounds and even CT scans.
There seems to be a lot of excitement about this work. Do you think that's because we are, for, you know, for the most part, a very dog-loving society, or is it something that these dogs bring that is fascinating to people?
I think there's so many levels that it's exciting. The capability of what dogs bring to us is endless, and we do love dogs, and we kind of like, why do we like dogs so much? And part of it is because they can communicate things to us that we just don't understand but enrich our lives. And then this becomes a tangible thing that they can communicate and save people's lives. It also is a little bit Star Trek-like. It's kind of like, how did they do that? How did they have that capability when we don't? So it is an exciting area.
And how do you look at these dogs? What do you think when you see them? What's your relationship like?
I love these dogs. I get shivers sometimes when I watch them work and when I watch how fabulous they are, and you know, and I'm very invested. They are kind of like my children, my students, and to watch them succeed is everything that I'm looking for. And I expect them to be superstars, and every so often when one doesn't perform perfectly, I'm like, oh no. And then I look back and I realize where they are and how much they actually have made that progress, and that they still are, you know, all of our dogs are still so young in their training, and they're so exceptional.
Dr. Cindy Otto is a veterinarian, and she heads the Penn Vet Working Dog Center. When the dogs are done with their long workday, they go home to foster families. So what's it like to care for a super dog? A dog that costs about $36,000 a year to train. Larry Roebling has personal experience, and she has this story.